Thank you so much. I am very honoured and somewhat humbled to be asked to comment on this amazing consultation. And I've been asked to look at it from a health workforce perspective. What I want to start by saying is that I think South Asia has made remarkable progress in maternal health outcomes and in the way that the workforce, the health workforce, has really responded to what's needed and what's been needed. I think it's been very creative, and I'll show you in a moment how I think they've done that. IntraHealth has been involved in compared to you guys in a smaller way in India, though we had a large project there, where we have looked at some initiatives on maternal health, which I might well refer to. So we have a little bit of experience, not as much as you guys have, and much kudos to all of you for what you've done and for this meeting, which sounds amazing. So what I took away, I've become very familiar with the meeting because I've read the report many times, and what I took away from it is that there are too few midwives stroke skill birth attendants. So that's about availability of the health workforce. That they're not well deployed, that's about accessibility, and that the quality of care is not yet right everywhere. So that's about acceptability, respectful care, and the quality of care. So what are availability, accessibility, acceptability, and quality? Dear audience, where are those to be seen and found together? Yes, universal healthcare, the right to health, AAAQ. Okay, so I wanted to relate that to what you've done because going forward, you know, we've talked about the MDGs, but as from this year, we're in another world. We're in a world of SDGs, sustainability, resilience, availability, accessibility, acceptability, and quality for everybody. So this is a brave new world, 2015 to 2030. So one of the other documents that I reviewed very closely, because I knew I was coming here, was the State of Midwifery 2014. Fabulous reading. If you haven't read it, it's great. And one of the connections I have with that is that Jim Campbell, who was one of the editors and writers of that report, is now the executive director of the Global Health Workforce Alliance. And I'm working with him now on some reports full of numbers of human resources. So I've kind of got very familiar with his approach on much of this. And basically, really, his approach is much the same as the rest of us has been for the last 15 years. I started working on international HR in the year 2000. So what we do as a sort of global HR community is we look at the pipeline of the health workforce. So we look at entrance to exit. Or as I once heard you say in your world, sperm to worm, but we... We don't quite go back that far. So, but we do go to the worm part of it. So if you look here at intervention points, at entrance, what often happens in low and middle income countries is you have very few people going to secondary school and qualifying, you know, at advanced level, particularly women. And I understand that that is the case in Asia often as well, that women don't have the same access to higher education. So people going in to be doctors, midwives, university teachers, tend to be smaller in number, unless you create a way to bridge that. And we've heard about that in some of these skill birth attendants, 6 months, 9 months training, which is fine because that brings in some of the population that wouldn't otherwise get in. And they can enter into an institute. One of the things that happens sometimes then that we tend to look at is whether there's attrition from education. And that can be, you know, that can really take a lot of folks out of education if they can't afford to pay. Do they go into the pool of qualified workers or do they migrate? And I know in India there's a big migrant population because they come here and they go, thank you to England, and they go backwards and forwards a lot. So that's another issue of concern. And then obviously the next thing is, can they be employed in the health sector or not? You know, what's the labour market look like? How often do we look at that? Do we then prepare lots more health workers who don't become health workers? They go into something else or they migrate. And then, one star missing. Then, you know, how long do they stay in the health workforce? Is there attrition from the health workforce? Will they go to a rural area? Will they not go to a rural area? How will we encourage them to go? So this is the area in which we in international human resources work with some success. But what tends to happen is that this picture, all that's in this picture has to be, as it were, governed by the Ministry of Health. They have to be looking at all of these interventions and how they flow one into the other. And to bring in a point that Jangir raised, I think, what's the private sector doing in this? Are they recruiting people from the public schools into the private sector? How is that interacting? So it's a real big picture thing. And what we found is that while these interventions work, and there are lots of tools that you can use for each of these starred intervention points, and give you information and give you, and you've heard about some of the interventions that have been designed based on some of these issues, which work. They do work. However, there is now some idea in my world of global HRH that we need to be coming up with big ideas that are going to change the way we look at these issues in a way which is much more profound than this. This is a very mechanical model. Nothing wrong with that. It works. But there are some more profound things which I believe are more to do with respectful care than looking at a mechanical model like this. So I'm going to share with you one big idea to be a little bit provocative. So this is our look for new solutions. And it's very much based, this big idea is based on Dan Pink, who wrote a book called Drive. And what he said was, in Drive, and I shared a platform with Dan Pink at a conference, and so that's how I know quite a lot about his work and have managed to apply it to some of our work. So what he said was, what we do is, to give people incentives, we offer them a pound of carrots. And when a pound of carrots doesn't work, we offer them 2 pounds of carrots. And then we're very surprised when that doesn't work. And he's right, you know. We offer financial incentives. They work for a while, but then they stop working to put people into rural areas because the cost of living rises, cost of housing rises, and it's not the only problem. So he suggests looking for job, what he calls job enrichment, autonomy, mastery, and purpose, and these are the three elements of job enrichment. So very quickly, autonomy is about self-direction. It's about, remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs and self-actualization and how that comes at the top and how we never take any notice of it, hardly ever at all. We talk about food and, you know, we talk about work and all those things, but self-actualization is a basic need for people. And yet, when we look at health work, one of the things we do is we task shift, which just the name itself is very symbolic of what we do. We give you a task. You can give injections, but heaven forfend that you should ever know what the injections are for, or you should ever be able to tell me that I've told you something wrong, or you should ever bring an idea to me about that. So this is about enabling people through good supervision, through mentoring, and through giving them feedback. And you all talked about that. Who gets the data on maternal mortality and morbidity? Who gets it? I bet it's not the health workers. And yet, they're the ones who could make a difference if they had that feedback, as well as the feedback about themselves. So we've been involved in India in a mentoring project where some very skilled nurses have been trained to be mentors in health workers in Karnataka. And what we found was that not only have the midwives become much better, or nurse midwives, they are actually much better at giving care, but they've also shown initiative. So I was reading a report on it. So for example, broken radiant warmers have been repaired. You know, nothing really to do with what they're doing, but they've seen that they're broken and they've found a way to repair them. And that's taking the initiative, that's using your autonomy to do something that brings value to the job you're doing. So autonomy is number one. Number two is mastery. So I took this from the report. Midwives can provide 87% of the needed essential care for women and newborns if educated and regulated to international standards. People want mastery. It turns you on to be really good at something, doesn't it? You know, it's a really, it's exciting if you're really good at something. Leave it to me, I'll do it. I don't say that very often, I have to say, but my husband says this a lot. Leave it to me, I'll do it. So, you know, growth, stretch goals, and paying attention to how employees feel about what they're doing. And this can mean that, for example, in the wonderful example from Bangladesh, the folks that become those skill birth attendants with the narrow training, I think you were saying, to me anyway, that there's a career ladder. So, you know, build in a place they can go to show their mastery, to show how good they are, and exactly what you did, give them feedback loops. So somebody saying to them, gee, that's really good, you know? I remember when I was practicing clinician, I remember somebody told me that they didn't feel an injection that I gave them, and I was so thrilled, I was such a junior, you know? And I was just like, I couldn't believe I'd done something so wonderful. But we don't encourage like community feedback to these folks, and it can be so important in motivation. And then finally, and we shouldn't really have to say this in a health-focused meeting, but purpose, connecting yourself to a cause that's bigger than you are. And again, there have been some fine examples about, you know, the midwives who are connected to communities and get feedback from the communities. That's their motivation. It's a purpose that's bigger than themselves. And again, it's about giving them the data. Give them the data. And you've talked about collecting qualitative data. I would say trying to collect data that shows that the quality of care makes a difference is so important and something we seldom do. So that's a quick, big idea on the road to better HRH. I hope that's done a bit of justice to the wonderful things you've been sharing. Thank you.
Thank you.